please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Adjustments to the agenda. Business from the audience that does not pertain to tonight's hearing. We have approval of the minutes from the April 21, 2015.
Chair Boss, I would move for approval of the April 21st, 2015 work session minutes.
Second.
Motion made and approved, the approval of the work session minutes.
Aye.
Voice vote opposed. Minutes are approved. Tonight we have a joint quasi-judicial public hearing in regard to establishing the Willamette River Greenway setback line in Glenwood. And this being a joint hearing, we have the Springfield hearing official, Gary Darnell, seated with us tonight. So we begin with a legal introduction. Lauren King.
Okay. This hearing tonight is characterized as a de novo quasi-judicial hearing. Quasi-judicial means that certain due process procedural rights are associated with this decision-making process. These rights include the right to notice, to present evidence, to have written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision maker. The record in this matter consists of the application and any supporting information, any staff report and supporting documents, and any testimony and documentary evidence admitted during this hearing. If you want an item entered into the record, either present the item to the planning secretary orally or in writing. By statute, you have the right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You do not have to give a reason for this request, but you must make the request before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record may be held open for an additional period of time to allow other parties an opportunity to respond to the new evidence. You also have the right to request a continuance of the hearing. The continuance is discretionary with the Planning Commission or the hearings official. The party requesting it must show that prejudice to his or her rights will not be cured by merely holding the record open. The procedure tonight will first be the applicant testimony, testimony of those in favor, testimony by those neutral, testimony by those opposed, a staff summary, and a rebuttal by the applicant. Close of the hearing and discussion of any issues in compliance with the law. Any person who participated in the hearing may appeal the Planning Commission or the hearing official's decision to the Land Use Board of Appeals. Please consult an attorney regarding a deadline for the appeal and the form of appeal. The Oregon Land Use Law requires that the Planning Commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to this matter and allow any person the opportunity to challenge the Planning Commission or the hearings official for bias. Generally, a conflict of interest involves a situation where the decision maker, his or her family or business, would benefit or suffer by his or her decision. An ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. At this time, it is appropriate to open the hearing.
Mr. Chair, could I have a brief explanatory comment for the audience? Thank you. The hearing tonight, the chairman and the city attorney referenced this as a joint public hearing with the Springfield Planning Commission and the Springfield hearings official. The reason that it is a joint public hearing is because the hearings official will consider these proposals on property that's outside the city limits but inside the urban growth boundary. The Planning Commission will be determining the same set of standards but only on property that's inside the city limits. So as it happens, we don't have the map up. The property that the Springfield Planning Commission is considering is directly underneath the bridge as you leave downtown and go into Glenwood, and it's owned by ODOT. All the other property is, well, it's primarily downstream from the bridges, but I believe there's some property on the other side as well. And all of that is privately owned, private property. And Mr. Darnell is going to be listening to the testimony that's specific to those private properties, or any testimony that you have just sort of in general, you know, your feelings about the greenway and the setback and so forth. But if you, I hope it's an assistance for you that you understand the distinction that we have to make under the law, that the Planning Commission is considering just the ODOT right-of-way underneath the bridges, and the hearings official is looking at all those other properties.
We'll open the public hearing for the Planning Commission.
And I'll open the public hearing for the Springfield Hearings Commission.
Do any members of the Commission have any declarations of conflict of interest or ex parte contact?
None. I'd like to declare as hearings official that I've had no ex parte contacts, nor do I have any actual potential conflicts of interest. At this time, members of the audience may challenge my impartiality or the jurisdiction of the hearings official to hear this matter. And of course, you retain the right to challenge my impartiality at any stage of the proceedings. Hearing no challenges?
Next, we'll have a staff report. Mark Metzger.
I'd like to use the PowerPoint just to give a quick overview for tonight, and to use this to be able to display maps that we'll be referring to later in the presentation. So some of these slides are repeats of a work session that was held April 21st. But I've shortened it dramatically, so we'll only be talking for about 3 hours regarding these slides, and then you can make your decision. We're having a technical difficulty.
Is it turned on?
I've got it turned on.
Turn it off again and then turn it on.
Reboot it.
Yeah.
Red windows, everything.
There you go.
There you go. Before us tonight is a proposal to establish the Willamette River Greenway setback line for properties in Glenwood that do not have established greenway setbacks. As Mr. Mott was pointing out, that we have our hearings official and the Planning Commission here this evening. The white dashed line illustrates the approximate area where the Planning Commission will have jurisdiction. It's ODOT right-of-way beneath the bridges that was annexed to the city of Springfield in the early 2000s. The remaining properties that are shown outlined in dark blue are those properties that do not have established greenway setbacks that are outside of the city limits. We have standards established for how do you decide where to put the greenway setback. These standards for establishing the setback are derived directly from statewide planning goal 15. They are reflected in our Springfield Development Code section 3.3-325. And rather than reading through these individually, you have them in your packets. And for the audience, the standards that this impaneled decision-makers will use in deciding where to draw the Willamette River Greenway line will be based on criteria A through H, which A through D are on the screen, E, F, G, and H. So the establishment of this line is intended to draw a limit, establish a limit as to how close new future development can take place. How close can a development come to the river? The city proposes to draw that line on the upland extent of the riparian vegetation, that is, the trees and shrubs that are adjacent to the river, draw the line just inside that riparian edge. Or in some places, the riverbank is just completely denuded of vegetation, and at that location, it would be a minimum of 10 feet from top of bank, whichever is greater. In the packets that you folks have, Exhibit G of Attachment 2 shows the recommended setback line in good detail, I think. It's a surveyed line, and it's divided over 6 different map sheets just to allow a scale that you can see. Shermer Satry Group was hired by the city to prepare the setback application. Brian Myring is a professional wildlife biologist who works for Satry Group, and he prepared, as part of the overall report, an inventory of natural resources in the Glenwood area. And the bottom line for that inventory was that there were no known occurrences of listed species, land species, in the Glenwood subject area. Mr. Myring conducted an on-site habitat assessment for those property where the property owner gave permission for him to come onto their property. Where the permission was not obtained, off-site methodologies were used to locate the approximate setbacks. Again, the dark blue outlines, those are outlines of properties. Those are properties where we did have permission to go on site and evaluate habitat resource. And there are two large areas that were previously determined, where the setback was previously determined, these were not walked. But as you can see, there are just a very few gaps in the riverfront where Mr. Myring was not able to go on. He did pretty much a full riverfront assessment on site by walking the site. I'm just going to scan quickly through the various maps, starting at the Willamette I-5 bridges along Franklin Boulevard. The line that has the black dots on it, those black dots represent survey monuments that have been placed for reference. You can see the line overlays an aerial photograph of Glenwood, and you can see how close that line is to that narrow fringe of trees and shrubs that line the Willamette River. And that is consistent with that approach that we've taken in drawing that line, where we're talking about the upland edge of the riparian vegetation. And that follows along the Willamette Riverfront. In those places where we did not have permission to go on site, Mr. Myring used off-site methodology and aerial photos to draw a line, and those lines are demarked with a little triangle instead of monuments. This is the next line. This includes Pioneer Mobile Home Village, and we have some citizens here this evening. I want to make it clear that the action that we're taking here tonight has no impact on existing development. That if you live in a manufactured home village on Franklin or on McVeigh, adopting this line will have no impact on your home site or the ownership or development of your site. It has nothing to do with that. It just says that if someday in the future there's new development, that line sets an edge to where how close that development can approach the river. On this map, just for reference, there's Roaring Rapids Pizza along with Pioneer Village. There's some large areas of undeveloped land along the riverfront. This is an aerial that shows the bridge, and the dotted area just highlights the area where the Planning Commission has purview. If you look closely at the map, you can see an outline of the right-of-way, and the decision we'll be making is for that segment of line that is within the ODOT right-of-way beneath the bridges. Just continuing east around the east along the riverfront, again, the line follows the vegetation. There is a funny-looking green trapezoid in there. The staff's original, the application shows a line that goes inland from the river to include a potential wetland. And upon additional thought, staff is recommending against its own initial line. This is an odd thing. I've discussed this with the hearings official, but we would like to use the existing wetland protections that we already have in our code to protect those wetlands if they're indeed wetlands. They haven't been delineated or determined to be wetlands, but consistent with the rest of the way of how we've drawn the line, we want to follow that riparian edge, that tree line edge, and allow the wetland code to protect the wetlands as needed in the future. This is just a picture of what we call the wetland area. Again, it hasn't been determined. This was taken just last week. The ground is fairly dry because we've had some good weather. I believe when Mr. Meyering walked it, it was pretty wet, but he walked it several weeks ago when we were having more rain. But again, what we were recommending is that the line follow the trees that are in the background and not include the mown area that's represented on the map. This is a wildish property, and this land has already been delineated. I just put this in for reference so you can see that we're consistent in drawing the line as it has been drawn in the past, that the action taken tonight represents the establishment of a greenway line for those properties that do not have one. There are, I believe, four different property owners who have taken action in the past on their own expense to establish that line. They've come before the Planning Commission and the hearings official in the past. And the line that was approved for those actions is very similar and follows the same approach as what is proposed tonight. That is to follow the upland edge of the riparian fringe. In your packet, staff has responded to and made findings regarding the different criterion for establishing the property, the setback line. I don't intend to go through all 27 pages of findings and maps, but I do want to give just kind of a high-level summary. Criteria A talks about the need to provide for recreational access to the river. And the Willamette Lane Park District has a comprehensive plan. That plan calls for a linear park, that is a multi-use path that will be public land right along the river. This particular line that we're proposed tonight will not prevent that path from being constructed. It in all likelihood will be located on the upland side of that riparian line, but if for some reason construction requires that that path be built between the line and the river, multi-use paths along the riverfront have been found by varying jurisdictions to be a water-related and water-dependent use. And in the case of development, as I said, that line defines where is the edge for new development. Between the line and the river, only water-related and water-dependent uses can be installed. So a multi-use path fits that definition. So do boat ramps and other things. But all this to say that the line we're establishing tonight will not conflict with any recreational use proposed for the future. Criterion B, will there be adequate public access to the river? Right now, existing development largely blocks access to the river. There are a few points where the public can get down to the river, but where you have existing industrial development and so on, they don't really take kindly to strangers walking through their property down to the river. Again, the proposal is to draw this line. The line in and of itself will not afford public access, but when combined with the Willamette Lane plan for the future, over time, as new development takes place, we anticipate this line contributing to the ability to make access available to the public. Significant fish and wildlife habitat shall be protected. This is probably one of the tougher ones to talk about. We made the most finding just because I think we want to be clear that we do have an interest in preserving the wildlife and natural resource habitat, protecting the natural resources that we have along the river. That's an important thing. In the case of the Greenway setback, that natural resource protection is balanced with other things. But with regard to natural resources, in particular fish and wildlife habitat, Mr. Meyering, when he walked these sites, was looking for evidence of any land-based animals, turtles, etc., that are listed by the state or federal governments as being sensitive, threatened, or endangered. He also accessed the Oregon ORBIC. It's a database of listed species for the state and for the federal government, and found that there are no terrestrial species that are threatened or endangered that make home on this site, at least not any known occurrences of those animals. We do have endangered fish runs in the Willamette. We do have protections for the Willamette River based on the Federal Clean Water Act that are intended to protect the salmon. In this case, we're protecting that river fringe, that riparian fringe along the edge, and that will be helpful to salmon. Criterion D, preserving scenic qualities, viewpoints. Glenwood, as it sits right now, does not have any inventoried scenic viewpoints. There are scenic areas along the Willamette just by virtue of being a river, but the state actually has inventories of official scenic locations and viewpoints, and cities are not required by law to have an inventory, but in this case, even the Glenwood Refinement Plan made a comment, I should say the 1999 Glenwood Refinement Plan made the point that there really are no official scenic viewpoints along the river here. The setback line does preserve, again, the vegetation along the river. If you're floating the river, in most areas you'll see the trees and not a lot of the development behind the trees. Those trees will remain. I think long term, in conjunction with the 75-foot river protection that exists for the salmon, this line and that other setback working together will provide both adequate, will basically green up the river. You will not have, it will be a scenic place to be. Maintenance of public safety and protection, and especially protection from vandalism. There are areas throughout Glenwood on both sides of the river that are used for transient accommodation. Sometimes vandalism accompanies that. There's kind of a balance between having a wide enough greenway setback that you have lush vegetation and not having it so wide that it becomes, that it hides, I guess, activities that maybe are not appropriate. That you want to have a broad green space, but not so broad that it becomes a refuge for folks who don't want to be seen or heard. In this case, the proposed line, I think, accomplishes that. But we've already spoken about how the line protects the vegetated fringe along the river. The state law makes the use of this term are to protect it to the maximum extent practicable. And we've talked in work session about how that phrase, maximum extent practicable, really requires us to use some flexibility in how we draw the line. It acknowledges that there are other underlying uses for the land. We want to establish the setback such that we can preserve that vegetarian, that riparian edge to the greatest extent possible and still allow for the intended and designated use of the land for the future. We believe that the proposed location accomplishes that. And again, the line that's proposed is consistent with past approved setbacks that were established along the river. Location of known aggregate deposits shall be considered and protected. Much of Glenwood has a history of aggregate extraction. That history, I think, is past, and the land has been rezoned for something other than aggregate extraction. And so this particular criteria doesn't apply in the same way that the others we've described this evening, or discussed this evening. And the final one, that line will direct development away from the river to the greatest degree possible. And again, the line does establish a setback. That setback is minimal, but it takes into account the intended use of the land, which is not as a park like across the river, Island Park, for example, that has a broad green space. The land here is designated for high-density residential, commercial, and employment uses, and the setback is drawn in a way that balances that desire to keep development away from the river, not going right down to the river's edge, but to allow the land next to the river to be filled in and developed at a high density. I think I've probably said enough for now, but I'll stand for questions.
Question. You mentioned the wetland on, I guess it's a tax slot, 3,000?
2,900.
Is that going to be at all affected by the way that we're voting tonight, the City of Springfield thing?
No, the City Planning Commission, and I don't mean to demean your role in this, but it is the area that you have authority to make a decision is that land within the ODOT right-of-way beneath the Springfield bridges. It is pertinent to the hearings official's jurisdiction. And, so I believe we tried to make clear what our intent is, and that simply is to redraw the line to follow the riparian edge at that location, excluding the wetland area that we originally proposed to protect.
How are we as planning commissioners supposed to participate tonight? Because we only take action on the Springfield Bridge, and yet there's all this other testimony we're going to be hearing. For the rest of it, we do nothing. I'm a Glenwood resident. I feel like we're sitting in the audience and testifying.
I understand the frustration there. I think, and I want to make clear to this panel, but also to our neighbors who have come here this evening, that our discussion tonight really involves the establishment of the line. If you have property that is currently developed, or if you have property that where you live, the line tonight will have no effect on your daily business. If you have a trailer at Riverside, or I think we talked briefly about Pioneer, nothing will change. You go about your daily business. If development occurs in the future on your property, it's going to be a decision of your landowner and not a decision that's affected in any way by this line that we're drawing. I can understand the fear and angst about the idea of closing parks and the impact that that would have on probably some of you tonight, but what we're doing tonight will have no impact on that. That's the decision really that rests with your property owner.
Yeah, you haven't answered my question. I think we'll remind.
Commissioner Moe, if your question is whether or not you can comment on the record, you are welcome to make any sort of discussion and put in the record just as any of the citizens are. Ultimately, however, the decision as it relates to the property outside your jurisdiction will be the hearings officials.
Okay.
But you can certainly participate in the hearing. It's an open record.
Thank you.
And speaking for the hearing official, I would welcome any input or questions from the Planning Commission.
Thank you, sir.
I have two questions and then a general comment. First of all, it's my understanding that the 75-foot water quality setback would also preclude future development of buildings and, say, parking lots from an area. Would it be 75 feet from the top of the existing bank?
Yeah.
So that would be, in most cases, much greater than the,
yes,
than the greenway setback.
And this decision tonight does not preclude or change that setback that was adopted in 2004.
Mm-hmm. My second question is in regard to the mapping. I reviewed both the current maps that were prepared with the input of Schimmer and Sautre, and then also looked at these existing maps that were done in 2004 by Salix and Associates. And in a comparison, there are a few areas that are, I would consider, more minor, but maybe a dozen of them that are where the Salix setback was considered further back. And there actually was one rather large one that I'd like to point to and say, I'm not sure why that changed. It would be on the city's map, attachment 2, page 29 of 33, at the pretty much the easterly portion, tax lot 700. There was a considerably larger area on the Salix map that is not shown.
29.
So it would be page 29 of the current mapping, and it's in,
okay,
it's compares to page 15 of the old Salix map.
Yeah, I'm going to...
Page 15 of attachment 2?
The old Salix map, whichever that is.
No,
attachment 3. Page 15 of attachment 3 compared to page 29 of attachment 2. I said, as a mapping professional, I noticed.
Yeah.
And I might as well issue my comment at the same time. Under the criteria number F, it says the natural vegetative fringe along the river shall be enhanced and protected to the maximum extent practicable. And I don't see that the line that we are proposing shows an enhancement, and it doesn't seem to be in any case. So I'm not sure that F is being, if there is no enhancement. Oh.
Okay, I'm looking for the difference between, we're talking about, on the one hand, the slide that's on the screen now.
Yes, correct? Under tax lot 800, sort of towards the easterly edge.
Okay.
And that would compare to, into page 15.
Mr. Sautre has agreed to respond to that. Would you like to step forward and answer that question now? Go ahead.
All right, I'll be back up and introduce myself for the record when it's the applicant's representative turn to speak tonight. But Commissioner, to your question in particular, the Salix work was done strictly from aerial photography. Site access, walking the site, exploring existing vegetation was not part of that work. So those lines were drawn only by looking at aerial photography in 2004.
I thought I read the report and that was different. Mm-hmm. Maybe I didn't read it as closely.
I believe that I did make the finding that substantively the Salix report is generally consistent with the line that's drawn, and I think a fair view of the Salix drawings and what we're showing here is that the line they recommended was very close to that vegetated edge in the same way that this is. The Salix report was done in 2004, which is 11 years ago. There may have been some changes in the vegetation in that time since. These aerials, I believe, were shot in 2013.
And if I may, Commissioner, other than the fact that there was different data set at the time that the Salix report was generated, what was done here, starting to use some of my testimony that was going to be presented in a few minutes, but what was done here was boots on the ground, to use a cliche, and it was looking at the entire habitat environment from the ground through the tree canopy. So we're looking for intact riparian habitat, and that's was one of the criteria we used to establish the line that's recommended tonight. And I'll speak more about that in a moment.
In terms of enhancement, I could point to one example where there's a minimum 10-foot setback line where there's absolutely no riparian vegetation. That's a minor point, but that's one example.
I understand. I'm sorry. I understand, too, that with regard to enhancement, our code requires riparian enhancement with new development. It's just that as the developments that are in place are not required by this line to go in and restore vegetation.
Now we will have the testimony from the applicant.
So pretend like I wasn't up here a minute ago. For the record, my name is Rick Satry. I'm the principal of Shermer Satry Group. We're speaking tonight as the applicant's representative. Our office is 375 West 4th Avenue, Suite 201 in Eugene. Our role, without getting into the weeds of the staff report and repeating what Mr. Metzger shared with you, Mr. Darnielle and the commissioners, I'd like to share with you the role that Shermer Satry Group played in the application before you. We really had two roles. One was scientific work that went into establishing the proposed setback line, and the second role was in generating the application and the written statement. And you'll find our work with respect to the written statement in the staff report, where there's a quotation that says the applicant stated. Those are excerpts out of our written statement. So we looked at the 8 standards that are applicable in the Springfield Development Code, A through H, and that's where that was our second role, was establishing, generating the written statement, generating what, as a planning consultant will say, are findings of documentation where the proposal is in compliance with that specific criteria or standard. Well, let me back up and explain what our first role was in this proposal, and that was to establish the location of the proposed greenway setback line. And this is very important, and what we did in that regard is that we began with very high resolution aerial photography, as Mr. Metzger said, recent aerial photography. The high resolution is such that that aerial photo alone was being used as underlying the suite of maps that you see in the exhibit tonight, takes up over 420 megabytes of data, so it's a very high resolution aerial photography. What we applied to the top of that was recently generated LIDAR topography. Now LIDAR is an acronym for remotely generated topographic maps from aerial photography. Now you might think, how could anybody from an airplane have any idea what topography on the ground is like? But what we've been able to utilize in other applications in the Eugene Springfield area, that we've been able to document with the remotely generated LiDAR topography is accurate within plus or minus 6 inches. So you've got an airplane flying overhead somewhere, and it's the Army Corps of Engineers under contract with the state of Oregon that has generated this. They've flown the Oregon coast, and they've flown the Willamette Valley. So we here in Springfield are fortunate that we have access to this very accurate topographic information. So we've previously been able to document that it's accurate within plus or minus 6 inches. That's been accepted in other planning applications in the community. So we proceeded by looking at taking the photograph and the topography, getting the two to line up with state plane coordinates and all that stuff that Commissioner Quaglo, sorry, would understand as a professional surveyor, and as Brian Myring, my GIS wizard in the office, would understand. And it's beyond my to explain how the heck that works, but it works. So what we did is we generated the photo, the topography as a starting point. Then Mr. Myring went into the field, and we'll say that in terms of physical access to the property, there are a total of 21 different tax slots or parcels in the scope of the proposal before you. 19 of those 21 are tax slots. They happen to be in private ownership in this case. 19 privately owned tax slots. Two parcels are not tax slots. One parcel is the right-of-way underneath the two bridges between Glenwood and downtown. And the other parcel is the property that's owned by Union Pacific Railroad, the railroad corridor. It's not a tax lot, it's a parcel. They don't have tax lot numbers. One could say that if you were trying to find a tax lot for the Union Pacific Railroad, it's somewhere between here and Omaha, Nebraska, there's a boundary line. But anyway, so 21 parcels. We had permission to walk the property from all of those except for three property owners. So there were three property owners that didn't give permission, but they were, that was an isolated small segment of the total Glenwood Riverfront. So by walking all of that property with the topography and the photograph in hand, it was important to determine the top of the bank. Not because the greenway setback line is related to the top of the bank. Well, it is in a few cases, so let me start over there. So what we looked at is we wanted to know where that top of bank was, because where we couldn't establish an existing vegetative fringe, then as Mr. Darniel mentioned, is that we located the proposed greenway setback line at a 10-foot offset from the top of bank. So even in places where there's fill activity, former excavation activity, mown ornamental lawns right up to the top of the bank, we wanted to establish that top of bank, and then we wanted that accurate topography information so that we could geographically, with the survey instruments, establish that 10-foot setback. So that was the importance between the photography and the topography. And we also know that having the air photo underneath the survey maps, as we're seeing here, very helpful information for property owners as well as for the applicant and for you as the deciding bodies here tonight. So the proposed greenway setback line is a function of the existing riparian vegetative fringe along the river, or where there isn't a fringe, then it's a minimum 10 feet landward side from the top of bank. And then that line was established after the science was in the field flagging that line. Who knows how many flags in the ground were placed over the course of several weeks. We located that with some mobile GPS field units, and then the city surveyor crew followed along behind the biologist and surveyed that boundary, as Mr. Mensker mentioned, and it's the city surveyor that generated the maps in the exhibit. And what you're being asked to rule upon, decide upon, is that line, nothing else, not the top of the bank, not any other boundaries, but the greenway setback line itself, which is the line indicated on those drawings. So with that, I don't need to get into the details of the applicable standards and the staff report, other than by saying that the applicant's representative does concur with the staff recommendation of approval. And we, too, are available for any questions. Mr. Darnielle.
Mr. Satre, do you remember when the LIDAR data was generated?
Not 2008. 2008.
And the aerial photography was, what, 2012?
I believe it was 2013.
13.
I can check, double check that and forward that to you.
Thank you.
You bet. Anything else, Commissioner?
I will have a question on how some of these boundaries were done, even though you explained it to me, or how one explanation of how they ended up where they are. I don't know the proper time or place I should ask that, because I'm still uncomfortable with being the planning commissioner. I know the public's going to speak and testify.
You can ask questions of the applicant now if you'd like. Yeah. Or you can wait after the public testifies, there'll be an opportunity for the applicant and staff again. So you can wait until then if you'd like.
It might be better till then. I'll do that till then. I see inconsistency in that line, so I can go where in some places why that is that way.
Okay. You know, thanks. Wait. Thank you.
Next, we'll have public testimony. Do we have anyone that wishes to speak in support of this application? Then we have testimony opposed, and I have two cards. First, we have Shirley Kenter.
Yes.
Please provide your name and address.
My name is Shirley Kenter. My address is 3998 Franklin Boulevard, space 15. Before I came, I thought that possibly the property that we're living on was going to be taken by the city. And I was unaware of that until this gentleman told us where the line is on the property, which you're going to plan for. Also, I wanted to add that we have a lot of geese that comes and hibernates in our area from the bank, river bank. If a high-rise building goes up along there, it won't be a lot that the geese will have. There's a lot of thought, but my question was answered earlier, so I feel comfortable now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Also opposed, Linda Page. Please state your name.
Oh, my name is Linda Page, 3998 Franklin Boulevard, number 20. So right now I'm understanding that this is just about some line. I don't really get it all, but in the paperwork that I got from that table, I'm reading that in the overall big picture, places like where we live, our mobile home park, doesn't fit in with the big plan that's to come. I understand tonight it's just about the setback line, but I'm very fearful that we're just going to lose our place because it's not good enough. The place we live at is such a wonderful place. I mean, I'm single and I don't be afraid at night and stuff. I feel safe there. And I don't know, somebody had mentioned something about eventually that, you know, well, we could be put in low-income housing. I don't want to live somewhere like that. I mean, when I used to read in the police blotters and stuff, places like that are full of crime and noisy and fighting people, and we just, the place that we live at is just the most serene place to live, and I just bought a different mobile home in it, a bigger one, and I paid $10,000 for it, and if I knew I was going to lose it, because I've been to two meetings in the past year, and I was assured that that wouldn't happen, but I'm terrified that we're going to just lose it. And maybe I'm off subject of the topic tonight, but I don't know. It's just, it's the most wonderful place to live. We could, I mean, it's not, you know, real pretty and everything to most people, but it's just the most wonderful place that I could live. And especially, I don't make a lot of money. I've worked for the same company for 10 years, and I've only got making like a little more than $3 more an hour. And the economy, the prices, inflation, they've gone up way more than that. But yet, this is a very affordable place for me to live, but I don't know. I guess that's all I have to say. I just don't want to have to lose where I live. And also this thing about, I'm not sure about it, but I understand, but it says, you know, it has to be, have public access, so I'm not sure what exactly that, how that would affect us if we did stay there. Just, I don't know if that means I don't know what it means. And if somebody could explain that, I would really appreciate it, because that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Do you have anyone else that wishes to speak in opposition? Is there anyone who is neutral who wishes to speak? And I have one card from a Steve Smith, and I no position indicated. So.
No, my wife and I represent Tax Lot 102.
You state your name and address.
Well, I'm sorry, Steve Schmidt, 13910 Southwest Heighton, Beaverton, Oregon. Representing Tax Lot 102, and I didn't mark the card, I apologize. We're favorable. I think the vision's great. I think the planning in the long run will be very positive. I have more of a question, and if it's inappropriate, you can tell me, and I'll get back with you later.
Interrupt. Tax Lot 102 is immediately to the south of the Union Pacific Railroad Bridge, and I've shown it on the overhead, but if you turn in your packet, you can see it. It's a narrow, pie-shaped property right next to the bridge, the Union Pacific Railroad Bridge.
Thank you. My question really is just simple, and it's kind of interesting to listen to this. Mr. Saxry has a materially different boundary or line than you had in 2004. Does it impact our tax lot? Maybe not. I don't know. My question really revolves around, why is that line materially different? And I understand LIDAR, totally, and I get it, but why is that different? I can't believe that riparian area changed in the course of 11 years. So it raises suspicions in my mind that you're really looking at vacant property as opposed to the rules that have been in place for years. So it's a question. Not a difficult one. It's not an accusation. I just really would like to know why it's materially different. So is that something you can answer tonight, or? Okay, great. Thank you very much. By the way, we do believe it's a great process, so thank you.
Thank you. Staff summary.
I guess in summary, we do stand with our recommendation that both the Planning Commission and the hearings official approve the line as drawn, as modified for the particular tax lot to exclude the wetlands that were discussed earlier this evening. In responding to the testimony and really the question about what is public access, for example. And I wanted to address this to you. Public access is simply the ability of the public to come up close to the river and enjoy it. And in the future, the city hopes to have a riverfront bike path right along the edge of the river that people can ride and enjoy the river from that perspective. We worked hard, and if you've noticed, close to the I-5 bridges, there's actually a bikeway now that parallels Franklin Boulevard that eventually we hope to keep people on the Glenwood side of the river all the way through Glenwood, where right now you have to cross over into Island Park and go that way, or you have to get out onto Franklin Boulevard, which is really a favorable place to arrive. But the goal is to achieve more public access to the river, to be able to enjoy the river, and in doing so not interfere with your use that you have with your home and so on there, and not to invite vandalism and trespass, but to have a balance where people can get up and enjoy the river without bothering you.
Let me make one comment to that. It isn't anything to do with what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about security along the river in Glenwood. That is, I support the bike path completely. However, it opens up a corridor along the river for the public to be able to go down at night, enter the properties from the riverside. I hate this. I don't know what I'm beating around. Right now, we have security at Glenwood because they have to come from Franklin Boulevard to get up to our properties. It's pretty hard to do. Along the bike path, they're invisible. And I've always been concerned about how we're going to be able to deal with that when the bike path comes in, but it's going to be a real problem to me. And I hope, well, I'll be involved with everything in those days, even then, to try and find some solution to that. But that will come with it. Sorry.
Rebuttal from the applicant.
I think I'll limit my rebuttal to the last testimony that we received, and that is that why is the line different today in 2015 versus the line that was drawn in 2004? And I wasn't there and didn't participate in the 2004 activity, so I really can't speak to exactly what went on then. But I can tell you that the 2015 work, what's before you, is as accurate as is physically possible. Photography, the GIS data regarding tax lot lines, the LIDAR topography, and walking the ground, walking those properties, and looking for the existing intact riparian habitat from the ground, as we said before, from the ground plane to the top of the tree canopy. Where is there an existing riparian environment? And that's how we are able to establish that line.
The overhang of the tree canopy is part of what establishes that setback. Is that true? I mean,
yes.
I mean, my assumption is in a 10-year time frame, the tree canopy could expand and could change that riparian zone.
Yes, it could. And a couple of responses, because that's an excellent observation. One is that the majority of the riparian habitat, the typical tree is not a wide-spreading canopy tree. They're primarily cottonwoods and ashes, the native cottonwood, the native ash. They tend not to have a wide canopy, but they do have one. All trees have some kind of a canopy. So really, we're looking for at the complete habitat, the complete column of environment. So regardless of, let's imagine it's a great spreading chestnut tree, right?
Sure.
But if there's no habitat underneath, then it's not part of the environment.
I said earlier I had a question about how come some of the lines were consistent. Can we go to the last picture of the
closest side to the freeway?
Yeah. I'll show you what makes me ask that. No, next one. Not that one. why does this line go like this? What's different here than there?
Excellent question. Well, what's different where the line is further set back is we have an intact riparian habitat.
In other words, that property owner left that property alone, therefore he's being penalized.
You could say being penalized. You could use that word.
Well, it depends on his interpretation of it.
But those are the state laws and the adopted Springfield ordinance in effect. It's applicable. It's where is that habitat? Where you're seeing it, where the mown lawn is, why is it so much closer? Well, that happens to be two tax lots there where the if there ever was a riparian habitat there, that it's not there anymore. It's a mown lawn. So in that case, that straight edge, that black line there through the majority of those two green tax lots, that's 10 foot, that's set back 10 feet from the top of the bank. What you don't see in the survey, you don't see this, the top of the bank isn't surveyed because that wasn't part of the application. But that's essentially, you know, that's why that line is straight and at an angle and close like that, is it's 10 foot offset from the top of the bank. And then immediately to the east, we've got an intact riparian habitat. Did that help?
Yeah, that helps. I can see some perplexed property owners along there. I'm sort of wondering why they've got a lot more property included in this than the others do.
Not to complicate the decision, but as has already been mentioned this evening, there is already adopted in existence a 75-foot riparian setback from the top of bank, and it is going to preclude development in the same way. So whether we've got a riparian setback or a greenway setback, you know, in many cases that 75 feet from top of bank is quite a bit greater.
The 75 one was the one turned down, that's why we're doing this process, correct?
The 75 foot riparian setback is established.
Okay.
The original Glenwood refinement plan, and the one adopted in 2012, included a proposal and it was adopted, so it included a decision that established this greenway setback line that's before you tonight in the same place, the same 75-foot setback. It was not part of the readopted plan in 2014.
It was one of the things that LUBA remanded, and the reasoning was that we didn't follow the criteria for Goal 15. Okay. So even though it would be presumably more stringent, we had to go through a different criteria process to arrive at the location, and that's what they're doing now.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of trying to say with LUBA.
Yeah.
Mr. Brian, you said the setback line has been surveyed. Except for the amendment near the wetlands, is that correct?
And the survey crew and Mr. Marlin did not have access to a couple of properties, so there was an off-site methodology, and the line was drawn from off-site and not on-site. But
so is the line a GPS ordinance, or is it meets and bounds, or how is it?
It's a meets and bounds description that the city survey generated. And in this case, where the revised proposal is with the green, is, if I understand your question, is how is the line drawn excluding the green? Is that what your question was?
That's part of my question. I guess if the setback line as proposed is to be adopted, am I adopting a line on a map? I would rather adopt a meets and bounds description. And is that in the record?
It's not. The applicant's proposal in text form is to follow the riparian edge with a minimum 10-foot setback. If you applied that approach to that particular area we're talking about with the wetlands and just followed the riparian edge, the tree line, and excluded the wetland, we could have a survey crew established monuments that would then be added to the line to show more correctly what the setback should be at that place.
Right, I understand that. I guess what I'm asking is, do we have that legal description except for that amendment right now that can be adopted? Is it in the record? Can it be placed in the record? I mean, that's more accurate than a line on the map. I mean, if we have a legal description, we should use it.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you if we have a legal description. It certainly is not part of your current package. I can check with the surveyor, but this is what I was given as the survey map.
No, and the maps are appreciated, but if we have a dedicated survey, then that should be used.
As a professional surveyor, I'd recommend that we decide what line we want to approve, and then the legal description be written after the fact to that line.
I do remember in working with the city surveyor that they were loath to monument something that wasn't adopted. Many, like often land division is monumented after the line is established.
In that one area or the entire?
The entire thing. Of the areas that aren't yet. Of the property that's under your part of the application tonight.
So we don't have a legal description at this moment?
I do not know.
You don't have monuments. There might be a legal description.
I don't know.
Yeah. Right?
Well, if we have a legal description, why do we need monuments?
They would set the monuments afterwards. Right? I mean.
Well, I mean, you can use monuments in the legal description, or you can use something else.
City surveyor isn't here this evening, but I'm sharing with you recollection of those conversations. Is they we talked about monumenting, and there would have been a couple hundred monuments set.
Yeah,
I didn't want to do that until the line was established.
So is the applicant asking me to adopt the map as the setback, or?
Yes. This map was generated. This is a reduced size reproduction, but the original of this was generated extremely accurately, and that's what we're asking you to adopt, is this line and how it was established by the city surveyor.
But there is an intent to, after adoption, to monument the entire line and provide a legal description, is that?
Yes, that's the goal, is in the end, when the process is finished, is have a legally described line that will serve in the future to establish where exactly the line is.
We're going to need to know where it is, because the vegetation will change over time.
Right.
And so it's, again, my recollection in all of our work sessions with the surveyor was, yes, we talked about monumenting it, but they didn't want to do it until after the line was adopted.
But it's going to be a fairly immediate process. It's not going to be 5 years in the future.
No, it's an immediate follow-up, yeah. Okay. In fact, I had an email from the surveyor today asking when this process would be finished, because they need to basically plan for time for their crews to go out.
I guess I would make that a condition of my approval, is that,
makes sense.
That occur within a certain period of time. What's a reasonable period of time?
I would have to check with the survey. As I said, the survey crew has been out there once already, and so they established some kind of, I don't know if it's a formal monument, but the little black line, the little black dots on that line represent a point in space that the surveyor has recorded and measured. But what I think you're asking for is that textual description that meets and bounds, and I don't know that that exists yet.
And what's the scale of the maps that we have?
I think it's 100 feet to the inch.
100
feet to the inch?
Yes, 1 inch equals 100 feet.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Planning Commission, followed by the hearings official, consideration of request for continuation in the public hearing, extension of the written record, or both.
You didn't receive a request for that tonight, so.
But they can consider it.
If you have a request for additional information, I think we need to leave the written record open for us to get that to you.
Okay.
Okay. You all right?
I'm fine. Are you okay?
Okay.
Well, the Springfield hearings official then closes his public hearing.
Planning Commission, close the public hearing by motion.
I move that the public hearing closed and record closed.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Moe, second by Commissioner Coivalla. Close the public hearing and the record. Planning Commission discussion, questions? Additional questions, I think.
We only have a small area to discuss. See, there's a whole lot of discussion there for us.
Again, I did notice a discrepancy between the original Salix and the current mapping, but I wouldn't consider it significant.
And just as a reminder, your decision as the Planning Commission is just that one property, that property.
That is the area of discrepancy between the two maps as well.
Planning Commission motion to approve the conditions or deny application.
After reviewing the packet and work sessions, I move to approve the proposed location of the Greenway setback as it applies to the Oregon Department of Transportation right-of-way, also known as the Springfield Bridges, as it's reflected in Exhibit G and Aerial Sheet 4.
Second.
Motion by Vice Chair Nelson, second by Commissioner Moe. Approve the motion. All those in favor, voice vote.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
In regard to the hearings official, I find that findings, extensive findings by the staff of the applicant, compelling, and we'll have an affirmative decision issued no later than Monday, possibly by Friday.
Thank you. Could I ask a question? I want to make sure I'm squared away on the statement you made with respect to the written legal description of the setback. I believe you said you wanted that to be a condition of your decision, that that be prepared within a certain specified time.
I don't know her any reasonable period of time.
I don't know. It's possible the commissioner here could offer up an estimate of how long it would take to prepare that description.
I'd say that it'd be good work for winter, and would recommend that the monumentation be completed by February, and the legal description prepared within a month of following.
So between now and February of 2016?
February, or the legal description finalized by March of 2016. The monumentation and the legal description need to follow, I think, pretty closely.
I don't know what survey staffs work like.
In my brief communication with the surveyor, he was asking me about whether a decision may be tonight. I mentioned that I anticipated a decision to be made, that there's an appeal period following, and that after the appeal period, then we would have kind of a known line to work from. And that he was basing his work schedule off of that. So I'm thinking that his plan was to go out into the field, in the next month. I don't, like Mr. Ma was mentioning, have a clue how long it takes to write that meets and bounds description based on the surveyed points that are in their, you know, system already, but I think that was the idea. And the caveat would be to go back out to the field and establish where, with respect to that wetland area, we're going to exclude the wetland area on that one property to resurvey that section and add that then to the description. So I'm hoping that it's well before February. So, but I'll take your word for it. I'll give them some room if they tell me February, and I can say, yeah.
Why don't we just give them a year from the date of the decision?
That certainly sounds reasonable. I know they're busy, but I think they can squeeze that in. We obviously will need to rely upon, if a development request comes in for any of this property, first it will require annexation, which will take some time, but we need to be able to pinpoint where that is, because it does limit, notwithstanding the 75-foot other thing. Forget about that. This one is specific to the purposes of the greenway, and we can't allow anything inside that setback that is not water-related or water-dependent. So the property owner needs to know where that is, and we need to know if they're going to submit a site plan for development of that property. So, and then ultimately, you know, it's probably going to have a different value in the eyes of the assessor because of the limitations on its use. So there are a number of reasons it's important to be precise about where that line is.
So should the decision then indicate that no building permit should be issued?
Well, I think what we can do, assuming that it's technically possible to go to the site if a given property comes in for development and establish where that line is, even prior to the entirety of that work being completed, then I'm fine with that. We'll just let property owners know that if the work hasn't been completed, then it's going to be necessary to take that property and provide the legal for that so that we can go forward with the development review. And there wouldn't be any reason for that, taking out of that context, for that to be inaccurate. But there, okay, then that's fine. We're okay with that.
Can I close the public hearing?
So, Mr. Chair, do you want to take maybe a 5-minute recess before you get on to the rest of your business?
There's only a couple items left.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had some business there.
Well, unless there's issues.
No, my apologies. I know there's some.
I mean, I can't anticipate what we.
Right.
Okay.
All
right, thank you. Reports on council action.
Mr. Landon went last night, but he's not here tonight.
If you'd like, I can make a report. I was in attendance there, if you're curious. I didn't bring my agenda. The Development Public Works Department pretty much had a monopoly on the agenda last night for the council. We had a proposal to require a checklist for license renewals on multifamily properties, 4 units or more. That currently is not a requirement to get your business license to operate a multifamily dwelling. If the council decides to go forward with this, it'll require an amendment to the municipal code in that section of business license. And there's about 20 items that the property owner would need to confirm the condition that the electrical wiring, he's got parking across the room, or it's already in either the fire code or the building code, so it's already there. But this would be a new requirement to get your license. The council wants to have a work session discussion on that, so they didn't take action last night, other than just say, let's have a work session.
Is this in response to some of the...
That was one of the reasons. The city's not in the business of going out and inspecting structures. As the building official told me, once they get their certificate of occupancy, the future of that building is pretty much exclusively with the fire department. So there isn't a proposal here to start being like an activist type of thing, going out there and inspecting these buildings. That's not the plan. Another item of business we had was the vacation of 16th Street between G and I, I think it is, just east of McKinsey Line Hospital. That was a public hearing, and about five or six people testified. Residents, all of them were in opposition. Then the CEO of the hospital, the chair of the board of directors of the hospital, another member of the board, and the architects all offered testimony and support for the request. So they weren't taking action last night. That was the first reading of that ordinance to vacate the right-of-way. There was a contemporaneous resolution to waive or not pursue a financial consideration for the vacation of that right-of-way. Those are the two items that kind of generated interest. Everything else was more or less a slam dunk. The capital improvements program for MWMC was approved. Something to do with downtown parking was approved too. I was listening to a conversation behind me about that street vacation, so I got distracted from that. But you may or may not know this, but the city's implementing a parking plan in the downtown. They're
issuing a contract with a contractor to do the surveillance.
A private contractor will be doing enforcement. And there are different zones in the downtown to reflect what you'll need in order to park downtown. I mean, beyond the two-hour limit. Permits, there'll be several, like this parking lot out here will be permit-only parking. I believe it's permit-only. Certainly it's permit-only if it's more than 2 hours, I know that. Spaces underneath City Hall will be permit parking. And I think the space that's just off, just north of the building, there's a surface parking lot. It'll be a permit. Then you can actually get permit parking for the street, too. That'll be available.
Do planning commissioners qualify for permit parking so before we come to public meetings?
After five, it's free.
Any human being.
We have to pay for it?
Yeah, staff has to pay.
After five, it's free.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem.
Getting those permits is first come, first served. So
it's for the DAC.
That's right.
We always want longer than 2 hours.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe enforcement stops at 5:30 or something. I don't know.
Stops at five.
Oh, okay. Well, we're okay. We'll never get you in here before five. So I think, that was it. There were some awards too. There's some kids from schools, fourth and fifth graders, who got awards for their drawings for a poster. Pretty good. This place was packed, and it was with goodwill too, which was nice.
Any other reports? Also, as director, do you have any business
Not tonight, coming up, we will have some business.
And business from the planning commission? And we are the German.
Good night.
You can get that broken. They can do it.
Been there, done that a few times. Night, Dave. Night, Sean. Oh, Sean, I haven't forgot your question about multiple devices.
So it's like just the...
Oh, okay. Our IT department gets heartburn or stuff like that, so I have to document for you to sign. So it has to do with that firewall.
We get something besides an iPad.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, anyway.
It's totally fine.
All righty.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, Mr. Landon, I sent him an email. He's coming tonight. Oh, I had an emergency. There's so many. Yeah, like, actually.
Tell you what we see with you.
Not good.
No worries.
Anyway. So... Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I was with the neighbors.
Be 54, so...
I felt bad because of the stuff that they submitted. They're so kind of shy with anything.
Any obligation they have.
Well, when you...